Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is Friday, April 15th, 2016. I am joined tonight by both Rachel.
Hi.
And Molly.
Hi, everyone.
And we have a huge snowstorm bearing down on us. So we're getting in our podcast here before the crazy weather hits and hopefully doesn't knock out power, although it knocked out Rachel's last night.
It did.
Even before the storm.
Like 8 hours. It was awful.
Yeah. So there you go.
Cool. Yep.
Lots happening in the world of politics. We had a Democratic presidential debate last night in front of the New York primary, which is coming up
April 19th.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So just a few days from now. Hillary is holding on to a decent lead, it looks like, on the Republican side. We're going to get to Trump and him complaining about a lot of things, especially, drum roll, the Colorado caucus.
Yay. Oh, so surprised that that came up finally.
Yeah, which we talked about in depth on this show, and had he listened, he would have known.
Yeah.
But he either did know or didn't know. He's acting like he's very surprised. But he's spouting a bunch of misinformation that we, of course, know is not true at all.
Yep.
He says they changed the rules at the last minute when he started winning things, which is complete BS.
Yes.
Correct.
They did this back in
October?
July or October.
Yeah, it's conflicting. I think some of the rules were made in July and then maybe changed or something because I've heard both. But
right.
Certainly before Trump was the Trump that is Trump now.
Yeah. Yeah. This was before the primary ever really got going and they were deciding what to do with the rules that were passed down from the RNC.
Yeah.
And decided to forego the straw poll so that their candidates would not be – or I'm sorry, their delegates would not be bound.
Which is ironic because they also released a statement today that said something to the effect of, well – What they're doing is they're going to cause sandbagging candidates who say they're for one candidate, then pick another. And it's like, ironically, no, that's why they changed the rules.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what the Ron Paul people did. It was – Molly, correct me if I'm wrong. It was a lot of the Colorado delegation. They were pledged to Romney or they were supposed to be pledged to Romney and then they showed up and they voted – Ron Paul on the floor and John Boehner or whoever had to shut them up and hoard them out of the RNC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that Colorado?
I think we were part of it. I certainly don't think
yeah,
that
I think
our
Colorado
delegates...
was part of it, not the only
yeah.
ones though.
Yeah. No, no.
So it's actually the exact opposite of what Trump is complaining about. But it's interesting, we're in the news and now everybody knows that our Colorado caucus did not have a straw vote, which we found interesting.
Oh, we just not finding this out unless you, you know, paid attention. Also, on the Colorado side of things, Bernie Sanders, there was a recount in a couple of counties in Colorado, and he picked up one more delegate.
Yes, he did. And they
some ruckus.
A little bit of ruckus.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a huge deal. It's one more, but it is, you know, there was a lot of anger on the internet, I guess I would say, about whether or not – you know, there was more that should have been for Bernie, and really it was all the blah.
Well, and the anger really came from the belief, and maybe this is a fact, I don't know if it's been verified, that the Democratic Party in Colorado told the Clinton campaign about this one delegate that they lost, but didn't tell the Sanders campaign that they had gained one.
Yeah, which I have to believe is just like a dumb oversight of somebody in an office like at 4:59. They called the Clinton campaign and then they're like, oh, time to go. And then they forgot. Like what would be the tactical advantage of not telling Bernie he picked up another delegate?
Well, yeah, there's no tactical advantage because in point of fact, he has that delegate now and it's news. So like they're just trying to
I mean, I guess you could say it delayed a news cycle wherein the Bernie campaign could have said, we picked up one more delegate.
But
in the grand scheme of things, yeah.
Okay.
But of
nobody
course,
cares about Colorado anymore.
But of
so.
Course, the ardent Bernie people are freaking out, and it's all
of course,
a conspiracy and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and
yes, it's confirmation bias. It's one more thing. Yep,
in the bag and in the tank, and it's getting to be that time of primary season where everything's a conspiracy and
can I just say how much I hate primary season?
I'm so over it. It was fun. It was fun for a while, and now it's just ended.
The mudslinging, and I hate everybody right now.
And everybody,
I hate all of them.
Everybody hates everybody, and that things are getting nasty and ugly.
I don't even have a side. I just everyone shut up.
That is exactly where I'm at, Rachel. Yes.
Molly, did you watch the debate last night?
No. Okay. No. Well, in fact, I read it on Twitter and we were texting, and that was good enough for me because
yeah, I was live tweeting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I needed self care. I couldn't do it.
I'll just cover it real fast. CNN sucks.
Totally. Who was the people? Wolf Blitzer
Wolf Blitzkrieg and Dana bashed my head into a desk listing her talk. They are awful, horrible moderators. And CNN sometimes does well. I think when Jake Tapper and the others do it, they let the candidates talk. They don't stay on script. They let them finish their thoughts. They let them address each other. Wolf Blitzer is like an autistic child and he can't handle that.
Yeah.
So he like almost literally like grabbed his head and started rocking back and forth and started yelling, shut up.
Wow.
And there was some crosstalk. And
the thing is, there's only two candidates. So why not let them talk it out?
Yeah.
Why do the rules need to be so fucking harsh and strict?
Because Wolf Blitzer and Dana Bash think it's about them.
Right. Yep.
I have to get my questions in, and these are our rules.
It's my network.
This is what I want to say right now. It's like, dude, nobody turned in to see you, Wolf Blitzer.
Nope.
No effing buddy. I can't stand them. And here's what really pissed me off. All the questions were geared towards this one said this about you in the campaign trail.
Oh, God.
And that one said that about you, and doesn't that make you mad? And meanwhile, not one question about reproductive rights, where there's been in the news a little bit lately, hasn't it? Not one. Hillary had to bring it up. Hillary brought it up. Bernie piggybacked and said, yeah, and LGBT stuff. Crowd's going wild. And Dana Bash jumps in and says, no. Now I want to talk about some quote, Wall Street quote. And I was just like, I hate these people. I almost wish both the candidates would have said, actually, Dana Bash, no, we're going to talk about this some more.
Nobody gives a fuck what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
We have five issues. We have bathroom bills. We have religious freedom bills. We have all kinds of closures and laws being passed in state legislatures about reproductive rights.
Yep.
I don't give a shit what you want to talk about, CNN. And if you'd like to have this debate somewhere else, we're happy to leave now and do it tomorrow. Shut up.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like a segue. It wasn't that it was something sort of related. I think Hillary just said, like, looked at the clock, said, we got like a half hour left. It's like, you know what? We haven't even talked about this stuff, and it's a big effing deal. And I, like, wanted to stand up and applaud. And you could say she's pandering.
No,
you know, you could say.
Can't.
Well, I mean, whether you say it or not, I don't give a crap is the point. It needed to be brought up, and she did. And then Bernie said, oh, yeah, and we haven't even talked about LGBT. There's a lot of shit going on there, too. And Dana Bash and Wolf Blitzer didn't want – no, that's not on our list. That's not on our list. Stop that.
Why isn't that on their list?
Yeah.
I don't know. They love reporting on it when it's juicy gossip and news and people are – you know, pissed off. They seem to love running headlines about it.
Yep.
So why is it like off limits to the debate?
Major corporations are leaving North Carolina. There are Bruce Springsteen and Ani DeFranco and a bunch of other celebrities aren't going to play shows there.
And meanwhile, Tennessee is considering a similar bill. And
they're pushing
it through
in a similar fashion. And I mean, there's so much news going on about it.
Yep.
It's a fucking deal. Why is it not? And it's a Democratic Party platform. It's a part of our platform. So why are we not talking about it?
It must have come down from the top at CNN.
Yep.
It's like, don't bring this up. It's not what we
want
to talk about.
If they want people to watch, that's the stuff that gets people crazy.
That's what we care about.
Yeah, it is.
I think they're still in that beltway mindset of the horse race. And they're not really getting the fact that there is a lot of people out there who, regardless of what candidate they support, who want to talk about the issues.
And not what one person said about the other person and respond and blah.
Yeah. And it's probably the thing that maybe they're looking on their list and they're like, well, you know, they see eye to eye on this, so it's not going to be a good pissing match. So let's not even bother.
We're not going to have fireworks about this, so let's not bring up
the dumb Wall Street speeches and the tax returns, which
that's what matters.
I don't give a crap about Bernie's tax returns. What do I think he was, you know, funneling drug money? And it's going to show up in his taxes.
No.
What do I think Hillary said to Goldman Sachs? I think she said, make lots of money, you rich banking asshole. Yeah, I get it. I know. I'm over it.
I don't care.
I don't give a crap.
It doesn't affect my life in any way, and it doesn't affect her or his ability to be president. It's obnoxious.
That's exactly correct.
Do I love it? No, but whatever. You know, there's bigger fish to fry here.
Yeah. I literally love nothing right now about anything having to do with either one of these candidates. I am so done at this moment in time.
I'm not so mad at the candidates. I'm just, this is like the, just the natural culmination of these friggin' primaries. This is just what happens.
Good point.
When you're battling somebody like that tooth and nail every day for months, you start to hate them.
Yeah.
And Obama and Hillary, and I've read this in a lot of the Obama documentaries. Obama at a certain point was like, you know what? This is personal now. I can't effing stand these Clintons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then of course when it's over, they all embrace and she becomes the Secretary of State and everything's fine.
She gives an amazing speech on the DNC floor
so good to watch.
And then appoints her Secretary of State. Like
it's like a hockey match. If you watch hockey, people are literally punching each other's teeth out. And then typically at the end of the game, they hug and shake hands and ask how the kids are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we are. We're in the third period of the 2-2 hockey game, and they're flying around and smacking each other with sticks when the referee isn't looking and getting into fistfights.
I just hate it. It's this time of the primary season that I just get crazy. I just can't have to it's too much.
Okay. Well, now let's move on to the good stuff.
Okay, good.
Ted Cruz really likes Campbell's soup.
Best story ever
in the world.
You guys are going to have to divulge me a little because I've been giving this a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And we're all going to talk about it.
Yes.
Okay.
We're all going to give our opinions, but I am going to game out a scenario here. First,
let's just read the quote. Get some context and say what is happening.
Because Heidi was being interviewed.
Heidi is Ted Cruz's wife.
Oh, yeah. Heidi Cruz is being interviewed. And, you know, I felt a little bad for Heidi Cruz lately because of what Trump has been saying about her. And
are you sure this is an interview and not from like a biography? Because it reads like it's been written to me, but I could totally be wrong.
No, this was this was like some kind of interview, I think, with Heidi Cruz recently.
Yeah, sit down interview.
Okay, so let me read the quote. When I married Ted, we got back from our honeymoon and we went off to the store. Oh, I'm sorry. And he went off to the store.
Oh, yes. Important.
And came home by himself. Well, I just want to stop right there. It's already very weird and makes me feel like a human didn't write it. He went off to the store and came home by himself, as opposed to picking up a homeless drifter.
as opposed to not making it home.
As opposed to not coming home.
He brought home a stray dog.
She needed to point out for some reason he came home by himself. Okay, moving on.
This is newsworthy. Yes.
And I was completely shocked to see that he arrived back at our apartment with literally 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup. I never bought 100 of anything. This was shocking to me. So we had a tough conversation about it.
Oh, I bet.
I said, "You don't buy 100 of anything, much less canned soup. We can't do this. I'll be making things." And he said, "No, I know you. You won't be making things." So the next morning, it was a weekend morning, I loaded up our car before he woke up and returned every single can. And when I got home, I called my mother just to make sure I'd done the right thing as a newlywed.
Thank God.
And she emphatically disagreed with me. And so when Ted opened the pantry, I had to I had to quickly tell him that I would go back and buy those cans again.
The end.
Ted Cruz, when they got back from their honeymoon, went to the store, bought 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup.
Okay.
They had a quote tough conversation in which he said, "You're not going to be making things." She returned them, asked her mother how to be a good wife. When he woke up, his first move was to go to the pantry, and then she had to be like, "Sorry, man, I'll go buy your soup cans again."
Okay.
That's
okay.
Just a recap.
Okay. All right. Let's.
I cannot with this story, you guys. I cannot.
Let's assume a couple things. Let's assume first that Heidi's memory is correct and that this is exactly how it went down.
I don't know how you could misremember this one.
Be so specific about
this story is so fucking weird.
It is so weird.
And now I have a theory.
But first of all,
let me.
Well, I just want to understand what context she decided to tell it, but we'll talk about that later. But I want Travis to get his theory. Let me
paint the picture here. Picture this: Ted and Heidi are on their honeymoon, thinking somewhere tropical, maybe.
Mm-hmm. They got money.
Yeah, maybe a cruise from Texas. Yeah, no pun intended. No, because there's a big port in Galveston, and they take the cruise ships to the Caribbean.
A cruise on a cruise.
No, I didn't mean to. It just occurred to me. So they get back from their honeymoon, and like I'm picturing like they drop their luggage off, like, our new home, honey. And Ted like kisses her and says, okay, I'm off to the store, honey. I'll be right back. And Ted Cruz comes back with just bags and bags and bags.
Precisely 100 cans, though.
Of Campbell's – precisely 100. Of Campbell's Chunky. Yeah, because, right, she didn't say he came back with what looked like 100 or tons.
No, she said literally
100.
And it's not like he mixed it up.
Yeah.
He didn't get some, like, pureed tomato. He got – Campbell's Chunky Soup.
Well, we don't know if he got different flavors.
Right.
Oh, that's
she
true.
Didn't say
but Chunky
that.
Is the key here.
Right. Yeah. The Chunky
Precisely
Soup.
Precisely 100
like...
of Campbell's brand Chunky.
Chunky Soup.
Soup.
Yeah.
You know, K-Gro brought this up, and it's kind of
he was
making...
so funny. He had.
Oh, my God. He had me rolling.
I couldn't breathe.
No, but when he mentioned the autism spectrum, and I was like, that kind of does sound like something.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He could be a little Asperger-y. A little.
Yes.
But
okay, so he comes home with bags and bags.
So he comes home.
Yeah.
So imagine this. Like, poor Heidi, she's sitting there, I don't know, putting up flowers or whatever she's doing to the new apartment to make it nice, probably.
Because she's a lady, and that's what she feels her job is, because she's one of those ladies.
Well, we haven't even gotten to that. But,
okay. Well,
yeah. And Ted Cruz comes in. And he's got 100 cans of effing soup. And Heidi is like, Ted, what is with all the GD soup?
What the fuck did you just say?
I'm sure she didn't use that language, but he's like, right. What's with the soup? And she's like, well, you don't need this. This is crazy. You know, I can cook. I'm going to make meals. And Craig goes, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
I know you. So this is what I think this is. I think this is a really bizarre day one of our new life power play mind fuck games going on here.
Yes.
Oh.
Yep.
Because this is Ted Cruz saying, you're not even going to be a decent wife, and you're not even going to be able to cook or anything. This is how I'm going to have to live.
I better stock up because you're going to fail me as a wife.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
going
to fail me as a wife. And so I'm going to stock up on – and every time you go to that pantry and you think maybe I don't want to cook tonight, you're going to look at those 100 cans of soup and you better fucking make me some dinner because I've already called. I've fortune told that you're going to be a shitty wife who doesn't know how to cook and I'm not going to want to eat your fucking food.
You mean you were on the same wavelength. We haven't discussed this.
We have not.
Now,
we've been like on a no discuss the soup thing because I'm ready to burn the world down.
Yeah. Yeah. But then Heidi. Right. Heidi steps up. She doesn't just take it lying down and pout.
She says, go fuck yourself.
Well, no, but she doesn't say it.
No, she doesn't say it.
She waits. She sets her alarm a little before Ted and gets up early in the morning and says, well, I'm going to show him.
And
I'm not
going to
stand for this. I am the wife. I am going to cook. I do probably the shopping too.
That must have been the weird thing at the beginning. I'm going to go to the store for what? I do the shopping. I'm the housewife.
Right. She probably thought he was going to Home Depot or you know something like that.
These strict gender roles that these people love so much. Right. So when she says this, she says returned every single can, and I can hear her just saying it like every one of those cans because every one of them. Is a meal that I'm going to prove to him. He's never going to eat a single goddamn can of soup, which is the mind fuck he did to her on purpose. Yes. Right?
Okay, hold on. I have a really important piece of information to add to this story to answer the question about whether or not there were different kinds of soup. Indeed, Ted Cruz interrupted his wife's story to point out that they all weren't the same flavor of soup.
Okay.
Different kinds, some chicken, some beef. You know.
Okay, mix it up. Good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So he mansplained
God.
The story. Good thing.
Yeah. He had to interrupt her to put that in because that was a really important detail to Ted Cruz.
Variety is the spice of life.
In the room with
they were together at a Republican presidential town hall in CNN. This is how this came up. This was their humanizing story.
This is their humanizing story?
Yes. This was like the thing that they were sharing to make them normal.
This is a non-humanizing story.
No, this is alien pod people. What?
Well, that's what I said. I said, like, are you sure this isn't a deleted scene from the Coneheads movie? Because you remember that movie and that skit from Saturday Night Live? Can you imagine, like, a scene where, like, Dan Aykroyd pulls up the SUV? He's like, I brought those kids for sustenance. And then, like, Jane Curtin is like, this is foolish. We do not need all these cans. I am returning them to the store. It is like,
oh my god.
So I like, that the, makes much no. more sense.
And then she's
it?
Like, I called the human in my life and was like, did I do this? Right? No. Oh shit.
We well, okay. Let me okay, go on. So let me go on.
Let's
okay.
finish the story.
Oh my god.
So Heidi stands up. And now this is weird too, right? Because not only does she, because I thought maybe at first she was like, 100 cans, that's just crazy. My silly husband, you know, like, you know, men do this. We go off and we buy stupid
shit.
He's
lived
and come
a bachelor
back.
Life for too right. long. And, he doesn't really know how to cook for himself.
And then our wife and our girlfriend's like, oh God, I can't believe you bought that. I'm returning that.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe that was it. But
no.
She returned every single can.
Yes.
It's like, why not leave the guy 10 if no. he likes his chunky soup, right?
That's not
yep.
the point.
That's
the
not the point.
No.
No. This is some power, play.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
Day
what it sounds
one
like.
One of their new life after the honeymoon.
Yep.
So Heidi sneaks up. She gets up early. She runs to the cabinet. She's probably hurrying and like listening, like making sure he's not like.
And how many
up.
Trips did it take her to get 100 cans of soup in bags to the car?
Well, if they had just moved in, I bet they had a lot of boxes.
That's true. Yeah. All right,
that's yeah. some heavy soup.
Seriously.
Well, she probably filled up 5 or 6 boxes and threw them in the SUV. I'm sure they had an SUV.
Yeah.
And then she runs off to the store, and I assume that he got the receipt.
I want to see the person at the what is this store. Store?
It's weird. I was working yesterday in this fucking bag. Got 100 cans of soup. And
oh look, woman, they're all back.
He back there with all this soup. What is happening? Like,
and then she comes to the customer like, service with like 3
yeah,
carts.
This is probably so before the day of the self checkout, right?
Oh, for sure. Well, that's 100 cans.
Ago. That's way too much for the self checkout.
Yeah, can't do that shit. Yeah, you got 15 items or less.
No,
okay.
Right.
So anyway.
So
she's at the service desk.
So
really
she
at
brings
this point.
Them all back. She probably felt really good about herself, and she said, "Okay, I'm showing him that mm-hmm. no, I can wife."
Yeah.
And so, uh-huh. but then she gets back and then she's like, well, wait a minute. I'm not sure. My husband did a thing and I immediately contradicted it. I better call my mother.
Oh my God.
Because my mother knows how to wife.
Oh my God. Oh my God. my blood pressure is just rising.
And mother did not say, why are you married to someone who bought 100 cans of soup?
And then threw it in your face like a
She did not say that. No.
Why are you married to someone who would throw in your face like a rock that you're going to be shitty at being a wife? And what is
yes.
that mean? No, her mother said, no, dear, you don't contradict the man.
Right. If he wants 100 cans of soup, then you let him buy 100 cans of soup. So then she, I guess at that point, she didn't have time to run back to the store and call before Ted Cruz woke up, because she probably only got up maybe like an hour before him or something.
Yeah.
You know? So Ted Cruz comes down, and ostensibly the way she describes it, the first thing he does at like 8 in the morning is runs into the cabinet.
Now, and granted, check if his fucking soup is there.
No, hold on.
He needs soup security.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe the coffee is in the same cabinet as the soup. So maybe he was just going to make some coffee. Oh, and then he has whoa, where's my soup?
Oh my God! I am literally dying.
So, but maybe not. Maybe he specifically was like the first thing, like, okay, I'm up. I gotta
sure.
go check on my soup. Make sure the
make
soup
sure
thief didn't come in overnight.
Oh my God!
That the soup fairy didn't come in and take my soup.
Oh my
Where's
God!
Where's my soup?
Where the fuck is my
and then his worst nightmare.
Oh, I see his face.
All the soup is gone.
The soup's gone.
Oh my God.
All that work. Oh. I had to ask him to go in the back room and get more soup. Because I wasn't enough.
I had to put the seats down in the SUV.
Oh my God.
I had to help him in the car.
It's just gone. Can you imagine the store employees? I'm serious. Like, you have this guy that comes in and buys 100 cans of soup. Then the wife brings it all back. And then she comes back.
Wait, well, I haven't even gotten to that yet. I haven't even gotten to that yet.
Oh, my God.
I haven't even gotten to that yet.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So either one of three things in this scenario. Either Ted ran, like we like to think, ran downstairs to check
his soup.
Check soup security.
To admire his soup collection. As one does in the first thing you wake up in the morning.
Oh my God.
And then she has to go back to the store. Wait,
wait, wait, wait, wait.
Hold on, we're not there yet.
Not there yet. Now, option number two is, like I said, he was just going to make some coffee or some tea. Right, coffee. Right.
Benefit of the doubt.
And the case happened to be the same cabinet. And he, oh my God, where's my soup?
It's a really big cabinet.
Option three was... Option three was, look, the guy loves his chunky soup, and he was going to have it for breakfast.
Oh, he's got 100 kids.
Yeah.
So now what am I going to eat, woman? It's not like you're going to make anything.
Yeah. So, for whatever reason, the way she explains it is that, well, how does she say it? So when Ted opened the pantry, yeah, so he opened the pantry for some reason.
I had to tell him, because the story goes like this. When I got home, I called my mother. So as soon as she got back from returning 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup, she called mother to see if she was wifing correctly. And mother said no.
Yes.
And mother emphatically disagreed with me. And so Ted opened the pantry, which must have been right after.
Yeah.
So he literally walked down the stairs after she got off the phone with mother and was wifing wrong.
Yeah.
And had to quickly tell him.
I could see the slow motion probably. Like, she probably hangs up the phone.
And she's like, no.
And Ted is in his robe, because you know he's like in a red
robe. Oh, yeah.
God.
Gross. Or maybe
with like a pipe. He's probably smoking a pipe.
Maybe it's like silk and pink.
Or maybe it's pajamas. Maybe it's like Yoda pajamas.
Like 1950s.
Well, I hope to God it's pajamas. Not. He wasn't in tidy whities.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh, my God.
So let's say he's in his morning robe, slippers, and he's shuffling to the pantry. Good morning, Heidi. And going downstairs. And then Heidi's like just hanging up the phone, and she turns. And she's running. You see her like running in slow motion towards the kitchen. Ted has got a big shit-eating smile on his face. And he slowly opens the pantry, and his face like goes from a smile to like utter shock and horror. And like the music. Dun, 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 dun. And Heidi's like, I can explain.
Oh my God.
I've just spoken to mother.
Do you think she said, I can explain?
I can explain.
I can explain.
Yeah. I think she said
I'll buy the soup. I'll buy them again. I promise.
Now, here's my question, because we know that Heidi ran back to the store to rebuy all the soup. Did Ted go with her? Did they have a chat first, or did she just grab the keys and run out the door?
I think she just
grabbed the keys and ran out the door.
Oh, no. I think that he gave her a sit down. Because he's the man of the house.
But she didn't say that.
No, she didn't. She ended the story by her telling him quickly that she would go back and buy those cans again. She doesn't say anything else.
That's right. We'll have to fill in the blanks here.
So after she explained to him that she was really sorry that she was wiping wrong and that he could have 100 cans of soup, and she's sorry that she's pre-disappointed him by not being a good cook.
Or a willing cook.
A willing cook.
Yeah.
They had to have a sit-down where he had to let her know really who was in charge and who was the man of the house. And mother had agreed with her that, you know, you don't defy the husband.
At least she called her own mother and not her mother-in-law.
Oh, for God.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to throw up over there right now. I'm sure Ted called his mother, though.
Let her know that the
mean wife lady was returned his soup.
Oh, God.
And she was like, she did not touch your soup. He's like, it's okay, Mom.
And then they probably did have a conversation.
Yeah.
Mother-in-law and Heidi.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's his Campbell's Chunky.
So Trevor Noah on his show had 100 cans of soup, like, displayed.
Yeah.
So that people could really see how truly crazy this was. Like, this is not something that normal people do.
I do have an alternative theory. We've all seen, whether willingly or not, we've all seen Adam Sandler movies, right?
Yes.
There's a good deal of product placement in those movies.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
So maybe none of this is true at all. and just like – because I didn't see the interview. Maybe Heidi just turned to the camera and said, Campbell's Chunky Soup.
And then Ted was like, hold on. They have chicken and beef flavors.
Yeah, maybe this was just all elaborate product. Like this was a stealth advertisement.
They're like, look, they gave me $100 million. I gotta say, Campbell's Chunky Soup, and then Ted Cruz has to be like, they have chicken and beef flavors.
Because now it's taken off, and there's all kinds of memes, and this is great.
Oh yeah,
Campbell's. Oh yeah.
Totally. Well, and I have to wonder about the store employees. Like, were they never allowed back at that store ever again?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine the conversation they had after he ran down the stairs and looked in the pantry, and then she apologized, and then she got lectured, and then she left to go back to the store? It's got to be the same kid.
Okay, let's assume it's a true story and not a product placement. Actually, I've known a lot of cashiers and baggers.
I was one, both.
Well, isn't that way easier then when it's just 100 of one product?
No, because it's different flavors.
Yeah,
so they've got different UPCs. So you gotta either sort them, which takes longer than just scanning them, or you gotta scan each one. For the bagger, you gotta double bag those because they're soup cans and they're heavy. Not to mention assuming they haven't already restocked the soup.
Yeah, right, that's what I was thinking. They're going to restock it all, and then they're coming back to buy it all again.
They hate you so much. And they're also going to be banned. Like, can you explain the symbolism of this 100 cans of soup to me? Yeah. Because this is very confusing. This is the strangest day I've ever had.
And I deserve to know. At this point,
for all the things you've made me do, for how much money I make, I need an explanation.
I doubt the cashier or the bagger.
This situation. You would.
Yeah.
I would be like, I need an explanation before I give you those 100 cans back. I'm not giving them to you.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
The shelving fee is an explanation.
Yeah. Yes.
So I really wish that Heidi would have elaborated and gone on more with the story. But
oh my God.
I guess the moral of the story was this was some sort of power play mind fuck games with Ted Cruz. That maybe he read it in like one of those books, like How to Keep Your Woman in Line or something. Like
some kind
one.
Of quiverful thing.
Yeah.
Where you're like basically Christian domestic discipline, where it's like, you know, you need to make sure that your woman understands who's in charge, and you need to belittle her and demean her to the point where she will react in a way that is positive to you. And then they feel that will actually make her feel more confident because she'll know her place in the world.
Well, that's the part that really stuck out to me, and the part that really makes it hard to believe that they would be willing to share almost when they're supposedly trying to win an election.
See, now you guys made me think there's like something deep here. I was just really enjoying the whole story.
Oh, patriarchy everywhere,
because
Molly.
here's the problem. If it was because Ted Cruz is a weirdo and like kind of a Asperger-y guy who loves his Campbell soup, that's one thing. But when Heidi confronted him, he said, because like you're going to cook anything.
You're not going to be making anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are right.
Yeah. That's not. I suppose.
They had a fight. If she had been like, he's got a weird soup quirk, don't worry about it. That's one thing. And you'd be like, what is that about? I want that story. But this is like an anecdote about like the nature of the power structure of their relationship and how he established it the day after their honeymoon.
Yeah.
Or the day they got back from it. I mean, yeah.
Nuts.
So weird.
It is so weird. Everything about it is so weird.
And gross.
And like I said, I thought Ben Carson was the alien, and now I think it's the Cruises.
And when I got home, I called my mother just to make sure I'd done the right thing as a newlywed.
Okay.
Right? That's the part that proves to me that this is really
important. Yeah, yeah. That there's like some unspoken rule in the relationship that she broke.
Exactly. Right. No, you're right. Yeah, no, the Cruises are this human skin feels itchy.
skin feels itchy.
Yeah.
So they clearly weren't living together before, though.
No, of course not. That would be sinful.
Right.
Yes.
And plus, they wouldn't have had this whole soup drama.
Yeah, no, she would have known about the soup fetish way before, after their honeymoon.
Maybe it wasn't even a soup fetish. Maybe it was just a pure power play. And maybe those cans are still sitting in that cabinet today.
Oh, I bet you they have 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup.
That's so gross.
And every time she looks at them, that's what I'm saying. Every time she opens that pantry and sees she remembers that it's her obligation to cook for him, or he's going to
be forced to eat soup.
Yep.
Ugh.
She had to return and rebuy for him.
It's even worse when you actually like try to make sense of it, right?
Yeah, because now it's like really, really creepy.
So gross. So and she, you know what? Whatever. You marry a guy like that, I don't know what you want from me.
I'm not in that situation
because I did not make that choice. So like,
yeah, that's
so
true.
So all three of us have been married, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So imagine day one getting back from your honeymoon and your partner doing something like this.
Oh, that would
try to wrap your head around that.
Yeah.
I would be like, I think that, did you hit your head?
Right.
Have you had a concussion?
Is it too late for an annulment?
Are you on drugs?
But see, we can't really relate because we were all sinful and lived with our partners before we got married.
Yes. Crazy. Because it would be absolutely insanity not to.
Crazy soup fetishes or does soup fetish power plays on you?
Yeah.
After you sign the contract.
You know, kind of anything about that soup. Now that it's been established as the power component to their relationship, does it get a little soupy around there?
Oh, God.
Because you, like, try to do the thing on the soup?
I don't know, man.
I don't know. It's a lot of soup.
It's junky.
And then there's splooshing. Who knows?
I was in college, I enjoyed some Campbell's Chunky Soup, but never 100 cans at a time. Two or three at the most.
And then when someone's like, hey, you don't need to buy all that. Like, we'll just be making meals. No, you're not going to do it because you're terrible, and I need to show you that, but it's just disgusting. He's a garbage alien. Anyway,
That's the story,
if anyone hadn't heard it yet, and that is our analysis of it. We had a good time. I don't know if you guys could even understand
any of it.
On that note, we're going to catch our breath, take a deep we're going to take a break.
Yeah, catch our breath.
Yes. Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
I'm at a loss for words at this soup story.
I'm going to go grab some soup while we're on break.
Sounds good. You know what Heidi did first off? For Seinfeld fans, she said, no soup for you.
No soup for you.
She's never made soup.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right? Because now what she does is just a reminder of like...
She fucking purees the shit out of it.
All
the meat, all the potatoes, it's just a fucking, like, liquid. There is no chunk of that soup that she makes.
No, or the opposite. She makes it as close to
the original as possible.
But see, that's something she would do.
Of course that is something she'd do. I hate it. Just doesn't even work
that
like,
way. You don't need to buy this in a can. I can make this.
Eat your
beef stroganoff soup, whatever.
Whatever.
It's even grosser. That's the grossest thing
ever. 800 milligrams of sodium.
Good. I hope he eats beef. On that note.
Okay, on that note. We're going to take a quick break and talk about some more stuff. We'll be right back.
How about a bite of your soup?
Take small bites.
Bite of mine for a bite of yours. Every chunky beef soup is so full of good things, you actually have to take big bites. Big bites of tender beef, bites of potato, bites of carrot. Every spoonful is a mouthful. You get bite after delicious bite in every bowl full of Campbell's Chunky Beef Soups, the soup that eats like a meal.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. Sticking with Ted Cruz for a minute. Rachel, I think you shared that story, or I shared the story with you about when Ted Cruz was fighting the good legal fight against owning sex toys in Texas.
Sure was.
So he was working for the Attorney General at the time, I think, and this was in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to uphold this law, and he was using the legal justification that there's no constitutional right to privacy when it comes to devices used to stimulate the genitals.
And that someone owning or possessing more than 6 of these devices would be someone who was considered to be promoting, what was it, trafficking?
Uh-huh, promoting or trafficking.
Trafficking or something else. I mean.
So you're a dildo dealer.
Oh, I'm like a kingpin.
Well, I'm not saying you specifically. But in general,
I am going to jail. Everybody, I don't even know what to say. Yeah, so if you own,
was it 6 or was it? I think it might have been 3 or 4.
It was six.
Okay.
6 was at the like trafficking level.
All right, like 5 they can handle, but like 5 is stretching credulity.
Yeah,
wow.
Just barely, but 6 it's like, look, you got to be a dealer.
Well, it's like drug laws, right? So
you can have
a certain amount of any drug, but then once you either have more than that amount or you have it in small
baggies,
then
you're obviously
definitely distributing, right?
Right.
So
if you have 6 separate dildos
or any sort of sex toys, right?
Oh, it doesn't have to be the same kind. Like with the chunky soup thing.
Well,
it doesn't have to be the same kind.
Let me just tell you, Ted Cruz, there are many different types and flavors.
A set of beads, a plug, a cock ring.
A vibrator, let's say, like, some, you know, restraints, maybe, like, a little.
Well, does he count those? No, he doesn't count those.
Oh, no, that's true. Okay, it has to be stimulated. Well, I mean, we could just go online.
You could really find some things that will show you how to do that.
You know, just go to Smitten Kitten.
What if I own six rubber vaginas? Like, you know. Like
Oh,
yeah, for sure. That's your.
Like the thing our friend does with the thing.
Oh yeah. You make the cock mold thing. Yeah, way off track.
But what if it's your significant other? Like when they come to when Ted Cruz comes with the SWAT team, in Texas and kicks down your door,
right,
finds your six plastic vaginas and buttholes.
Yeah,
what if you say, look, they're molded after my girlfriend who's in another state.
Right.
Off the hook. I don't know.
Is that like idolatry in some way or something?
But that's a totally different thing. Yeah. Like idolatry is not illegal. He'd like it to be.
Yeah. So So Ted Cruz would like it very much to be illegal
outlaw dildos and vibrators.
Yes, and that those of us who have more than a few should really be in.
Well, in fairness, this is what he used to litigate. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he still has those views, but.
And then, his college roommate.
Oh, God.
Go on.
So.
Craig Mazin, I think is his name.
Yes.
He got on Twitter. Because Ted Cruz said that you have no constitutional right, basically, to masturbate. and said, I think that the direct tweet was, the quote was, this would be, having been his college roommate, this would be a newly held belief that Ted Cruz has.
Yes, this would be a new belief of his.
Yes.
And then he tweeted, Ted Cruz did not have a dildo stashed under his pillow. Ted Cruz slept on top of his pillow.
Oh, he's a pillow humper?
No, I think he meant he's the dildo.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Well.
Wow. Yeah. So, anyway, I just think that... for the party of like small government and privacy and.
Oh, no. That's not when it comes to the woman's body.
No, because he's not talking about fleshlights, you know?
Well, those might not have been real big back then. Fleshlights are a relatively new phenomenon. I don't know. I've never owned one.
There's had to have been like stuff for dudes.
Oh, for years, right? Sure. But it wasn't as mainstream popular and it certainly wasn't as easy to buy.
No, and vibrators have been around since the days of hysteria.
Sure. Yes.
Like that's what doctors invented because their hands were getting sore, which is. Anyway, we've got a long tangent about the history of women's sexuality,
yes,
and the medical field and legislation, but I thought it was pretty funny that it was brought up, and it just sort of goes to show that, like...
Well, in the 1990s, Ted Cruz was still litigating and fighting against the personal ownership of sex toys.
Correct. And to be fair, when I studied sexuality in the law in college, there were a lot of laws that were on the books that were kind of outdated, but could sometimes be used against people.
But rarely were.
Rarely were.
You rarely had an attorney for the state's attorney general fighting it.
There was some law in Kentucky about peanuts in church from God knows when, right? And that was never, ever
wearing
used.
A duck on your head in Wisconsin on Sunday. Right. Yeah.
Right.
And this was considered one of those kind of laws.
Right.
And the fact that he chose to say, well, it's on the books. we should start enforcing the law as it's written about this one specific thing.
Sounds way too personal, doesn't it?
Well, it does,
like maybe
right?
Maybe some like a woman he know was preferring something.
Well, there's this thing, right? So if we're going to get into this, let's do it.
Yeah, I'm like not any more personal than abortion.
Well, but hold on. So there's this thing about like there are certain types of men who feel threatened by sex toys.
Mm-hmm.
Not because their partners prefer sex toys, but because they feel threatened by them. And so they make this whole – I'm an avid Dan Savage listener. I'm sure probably most of our listeners are. But he talks about this sort of insecurity that some specifically straight men have about women using sex toys in the bedroom because they're like, why am I not enough? And da-da-da-da-da.
Right,
and it's this gross, like, I don't even know, controlling, insecure nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got to be one of those guys.
You would think, right?
He definitely is. He wants to legislate against anyone having them. Imagine if you're his wife.
Well, she's very insecure about soup.
Well, she has every right to be.
She's insecure about a whole lot, sounds like.
Jesus. Maybe she should put up some legislation against, soup limit. legislation. You can only buy so much canned soup. So anyway, that's the
okay, other so, insanity. So we've Ted delved into the very dark, twisted mind of Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to something else.
What do we want to talk about?
Religious freedom laws are backfiring horribly all over the place, as should have been completely predictable. Yeah. But people like McCrory are scared of getting primaried from the right, so they have to just eat it and hope for the best. And it's becoming a huge cluster. What's going on in North Carolina, Molly?
Well, North Carolina
– since passing the law.
Since passing the law, the law has been hugely impactful. They've had several different conferences pull out, several different businesses who have canceled their expansion plans into North Carolina. Musicians have pulled out, including Bruce Springsteen, Ringo Starr, Ani DeFranco. I'm sure there are more festivals being canceled. It's having a huge, and I know there are several states who have limited their official travel to the state, and they won't pay for it, reimburse it. So
yeah, I know New York City did, and some other
places in California. Also, there's
San Francisco,
big businesses who had plans to
expand.
Yep. And I want to just give a shout out to Dawn really quick. She posted a thing earlier. She works for New Belgium Brewery, and they have just opened a brewery in North Carolina. And it's done. And so what they did is this lovely thing. Which is, I think it's called Don't Be Mean Beer.
Uh-huh.
And they're doing this entire fundraiser around combating HB2 with beer.
Okay.
So that's pretty cute. Because they're already, they're done.
Yeah.
So they can't back out now because it's a multi-million dollar, I'm sure, operation.
It's a contract breach if they did, so it's inexcusable.
But it's having a huge impact on North Carolina. And I read an article the other day from a different perspective from some artists and local businesses in North Carolina who said, we're being negatively impacted by something that we don't support. And it's not just affecting the government of North Carolina, but that it's affecting small businesses and people who live there that don't support the bill. And I understand. I get it. If that had happened in Colorado, I would be like, no.
And it did. It did.
Well, it did. That's right.
I'm remembering Amendment 2, and I'm remembering the boycotts that happened around that.
Yeah.
And that was a huge impact.
Yep. But I also feel like, then you should really, really, really get a coalition of people to lobby your government to change it, because you live there. So you have the greater impact than I do.
Show up to midterms.
Yep.
Well, and then so what are the other states that are considering similar laws and now questioning? I think Tennessee.
Can I jump in on Tennessee real quick?
Uh-huh.
Just because it's hugely impactful to my particular field.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee has just passed a law, and the governor signed it, which I find to be one of the most odious and unethical laws I've ever heard of, basically stating that mental health professionals in the state of Tennessee can refuse to treat someone based on personally held beliefs. So essentially what they're saying is that mental health professionals who are licensed in the state of Tennessee can refuse to treat LGBTQ people if they believe if they have firmly held beliefs that that is morally wrong.
Sincerely,
so I have to imagine that's being challenged and brought to the courts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it will be on that level. But my question has been, and what I've been active in, is what are the licensing boards that have parity in different states going to be doing about the fact that they have licensed professionals in this state?
Oh, there's going to be no reciprocity.
Because it's not just LGBTQ people, although that's the primary focus. But let's say that you're a marriage counselor and you don't believe in interracial marriage.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So you refuse to treat that couple. Let's say that you don't believe in let's say that you're a crisis counselor and you think that women should defer to men. And so you refuse to see women who are being abused by their husbands.
Yes.
Or let's say that you are against gays and so you don't want to help someone through finding out that they're HIV positive. Or let's say, there's a million impacts.
It strikes to the hypocrisy of the Republican Party stating that we need more mental health care.
Because of guns.
For all of these people, because of guns, and because, you know, we have a mental health crisis in our country, and they always defer to that. And yet they attack, like, the, you know, people who are in crisis, needing assistance, needing support, are going to be rejected once again.
Well, and what kind of impact does that have on someone who is in crisis? It's not just, hey, I'm not going to perform the, I'm not going to give you this medication. You have to go to a different pharmacy. This is, I'm in crisis. I'm at the end of my rope, and now I've been rejected by someone.
My therapist that I went to go get help from.
Yes.
And increased, I mean, suicide rate. And I find it to be so personally abhorrent and affronting that it's like been on my mind, and I've been
that
really
has to violate some federal statutes too.
I would think so.
There's got to be something.
The thing is, I hope so. States can pass these laws, and they'll always get struck down because they are unconstitutional and they violate a number of federal laws and a number of board laws. Mm-hmm. But for the limbo time before a court puts an injunction on the law, real lives get affected.
Sure. Yes. Well, you can get an injunction sometimes on these things right away.
And sometimes before they even go into effect.
Right.
Assuming that doesn't happen, though.
I don't know the details of this Tennessee law.
Yeah, I don't know where it is, but even just the idea of it has got to be – because therapy is a hard thing to start.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for people who are like, oh, well, definitely I'm not going to now because what if my therapist, you know?
Rejects
so,
me
yeah.
Reports
so,
well, me or something.
Yeah. And the bill banning conversion therapy here in Colorado failed yet again because of the Republican Senate.
Yep.
And I misspoke. They have not passed the law. Bill Haslam, the governor of Tennessee, is reviewing House Bill 1840. Which would allow counselors and therapists to deny patients they feel would violate their sincerely held principles.
Wow.
So, and they also have a bathroom bill, House Bill 2414, which would bar transgender people's use of school bathrooms that correspond with their gender identity.
Is that wrapped in a larger, huge, sweeping anti-LGBT bill like the North Carolina one? I'm sure.
No, these are – I mean, as far as what I'm reading, these are separate bills. So there's 1840 and 2414.
So
but who knows what else they're going to put in it 12 hours before they pass it like they did in North Carolina.
Well, they won't get away with it. See, they thought they were being clever in North Carolina.
Yep.
They thought if they slipped it in real fast, it would be under the radar.
Yeah. And it was like on a weekend. And
no one will know. How'd that work out? And so, but these people live in these echo chamber groupthink bubbles anyway.
Exactly.
So it doesn't surprise me that they're, what? All these companies are pulling out? What? I don't understand.
Why? I thought they liked Republicans.
I thought they all agreed with me.
I have a right to my religious freedom. Yeah. Well, that's the same argument that was made in the 60s around the civil rights movement was like, you know, the fight over public discrimination, meaning that if you own a place that's a public business, you do not have the right to discriminate against people
based on
a series of things. And we keep trying to add to those things, and that's the struggle now. But, public rights and accommodations is the fight that we had in the 60s around people of color, and it's the fight that we're having now around LGBT people, and they're going to lose. This is the death rattle of the cause against LGBT rights. So
we're
going to have
a
little bit of
growth.
It's very painful. And it's painful for the people who currently are suffering through it in those states and communities. And I am not trying to say that it's not painful or impactful to their life.
Do people like Haslam and McCrory think about their legacy that in 20 and 30 years they'll be like George Wallace?
I don't know. I think they do.
I think they do. But what they're thinking is, yeah, I'll worry about that in 20 or 30 years. Right now, I got to worry about next spring because I'm going to get primaried by this Tea Party guy from the right because I didn't pass this bill.
And who's to say they don't love George Wallace?
That's what I was going to say.
Well,
I hope I'm George Wallace. Their
constituents, but a lot of these guys probably realize how damaging it is. But it doesn't matter. I mean, actions matter.
Yeah.
I don't care what they think or feel in their hearts. They have to govern accordingly.
I mean, the transphobia and this undercurrent, this poisonous undercurrent that they're pushing that somehow
Rachel, nobody wants to be remembered as a bigoted pariah. Nobody does. Even George Wallace, before he died, had to come groveling back on his hands and knees and went into black churches and said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I was a total asshole. I don't want to go to hell for being such an asshole. Please forgive me."
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah.
because that was the, you know, the nature of those
folks.
But
I just think that these people don't understand that the nature of and I struggle comparing the nature of the civil rights movement to the nature of the LGBT movement, because I think there's a lot of controversy around that, and I'm not going to be the person to say that it is or isn't the same or anything like that. But I would say that
I think there's a lot of parallels.
I do too. A lot of people would really disagree with that, and that there are parallels. I think we can say that that's true. But regardless, you know, there's always this pattern that emerges when social change happens, and it's like we win, and then when we start to lose ground, we throw a tantrum, and then when we start to really actually lose, we completely try to burn the world down, and then eventually we just say, well, we lost. And that's what always happens. And there's always going to be people that don't accept that they lost, but we're in that kind of death knell stage of the really tantrum throwing, completely losing their minds phase of the LGBT struggle with the Republican Party, where, you know, let's just do whatever we can. Let's just really try to
throw up all the roadblocks,
everything possible, because we have, they know they lost,
slipping away,
but they just want to do everything they can to stop it. And eventually, you know, soon.
Here's my worry, though. We said the same thing about abortion rights, you know, that it was settled law and that, you know, we didn't have to, like, this was just the death knell, and and we see that that's actually not the case, you know.
Well, they pivoted their strategy. They got smarter. Right.
But I think the difference between that and sort of like, if you look at racism and homophobia, it's not acceptable anymore to have on the news, let's say, like a Black Lives Matter person and a KKK person, to sort of give license or to give airtime to someone who is outright racist. Really, no networks do that anymore, because we don't see that point of view as
Fox pushes boundaries sometimes.
They do, but you don't have David Duke on Fox News as like a counterpoint, because racism is still being debated. Like, we don't. We see racism as inherently bad and not socially acceptable. We have dog whistles. We always will. Hopefully not always, but we definitely do. But there's still that, you know, putting the guy from the Family Research Council on, or
in 20 years, that will be like David having
that. It's going to be stigmatized, like racism is now.
We're just getting to that point where, like, some networks don't anymore put those people on, because it's not a legitimate perspective. It's not, this is one side and this is the other. And so,
hopefully we get the same place with climate deniers, but that's another story.
Right. And that's also, you know, again, not
speaking
about...
of which. Our girl Sarah Palin.
Is she our girl?
She's trending today. And why is she trending today?
Tell me what she said, Jeff.
She was ranting about the, you know, climate change still being a hoax.
Yeah.
Right.
Is she campaigning for Trump or something?
I don't know what she was doing.
Okay. Does anyone ever know what she's doing?
Reality show what she's or doing? Website or cookbook or whatever.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And she said,
cookbook.
The topic of Bill Nye came up, and she said something like, oh, yeah, right. Bill Nye's as much a scientist as I am. And I was like, okay, Sarah Palin. Bill Nye was an actual paid scientist for Boeing. And he actually helped invent quite a few things for them and holds several patents. He built part of the Mars rover.
Yes.
He has patents on, I think, a new type of microscope for kids or something like that.
Wikipedia, Bill Nye, or just type in Bill Nye resume. Okay.
He's a board member of, I think, over six different scientific think tanks and societies. Correct. He holds a half a dozen honorary doctorates.
Yes. So here's what I want to say about that. Bill Nye, the person, did not get asked to be Bill Nye the science guy because he was a quirky dude. And then he became a scientist.
Right.
Bill Nye was a renowned scientist who got asked to do a children's television show because he knew everything about science and maybe he could explain it in a way that kids could understand.
I think he actually started with a Saturday Night Live knockoff called Almost Live, which I remember.
I know. Well, what I'm saying is, like, Bill Nye is not like some guy who liked science who then learned about it after he became known as Bill Science. He got the gig of Bill Nye the Science Guy. Why he's sort of famous, at least to my generation, is that because
now he worked in aerospace for Boeing. He was a renowned
scientist.
Yes,
he knows everything about science.
Yes.
So it's not that he's like some TV personality character the way that Sarah Palin is, so his opinion doesn't matter. It's that he was a scientist and he got paid to do a quirky kids TV show.
But that's very typical Sarah Palin.
Yeah, she doesn't know anything. She's just like she cares and what the truth is. Yeah.
Well, and it's like saying Neil deGrasse Tyson is a pundit. I mean,
Oh my God.
It's insane to me. I mean,
God.
But I mean, when you live in a vacuum where knowledge is frowned upon and achievement is looked at as being, you know, something to
elitist.
Right.
Yeah, it's elitist.
The pursuit of knowledge and enlightenment itself is the enemy.
Yes.
Of Sarah Palin and her ilk.
And why is that?
I could get into the nuances. I think of like, well, I won't get too far into it, but I have this whole theory about religious training and this dogmatic belief system that's instilled from a very young age, and anything that challenges that is seen very much as a threat.
Yeah, of course. Quiverful.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mormons even.
Yeah,
I've known some that there were books that I was reading that they were like, oh, I can't read that. I'm like, why? It's on the list. What list? The list.
But speaking,
I can't read. I'm like, what does that mean? And it's because it was what's that? Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
When I was a kid, my mom loved him, and I was reading that book.
Well, what's objectionable about that for Mormons?
It's a little spiritual. Doesn't have enough God in it.
Oh.
It sort of recognizes individual spirituality rather than having
dogmatic.
Yep.
Prescribed.
Yeah. And I'm not any of those things
Harry
anymore.
Harry Potter's got to be on that list.
Oh, too. Definitely. Yeah,
but can we talk about one thing cool in science that happened today with Obama's
can we please
science fair?
Oh my God,
he's the cutest, and
Molly,
I'm gonna write him in. I swear.
I'm so sick of primary season, and then I'm watching this video, and he's just like playing with these kids. The president of the United States is like your cool uncle.
And we gave Roosevelt a third term, right?
Yes. I'm not kidding.
No, I'm not either.
Primaries, I'm just done. Like, let's just stop doing all this, and he can just be the president some
more. Let's not do that for his sake. He wants out.
I think he wants to go raise his – I mean, his kids are grown, but he just wants to enjoy his life.
Relax and play some golf, which the
Republicans – I don't think he wants to do any of that. I don't think –
What do you mean, Travis? Is he like
a – do something great.
An orator? Yeah.
No, he's a corporate sellout if he gives speeches.
If he charges speaking fees.
Don't take money for it. Don't get paid for your work. It's fine.
Nope. Just be free.
But no, I think he wants to do something great. I don't think that he's going to be George W. Bush that goes and paints selfies.
No.
I think he's going to do some bad
or
ones,
does awful paintings of dogs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He paints like himself and dogs, fucking jars that his wife, whatever. I don't even know. I can't
soup?
Even tell
does
what
he
they
paint
are.
Soup.
Soup. It's the soup connection.
Oh my God, there it is.
He's a big. Maybe he's a big Andy Warhol fan. Well, no, Warhol didn't do chunky soup. He just did the regular, you know.
Yeah, water. Regular Campbell's like, soup.
I don't know if they had chunky soup back then.
Yeah, it was like plain
in the 70s or 80s, but
yeah,
probably because like, we're like it's gonna be more like look more like real food.
Yeah, exactly. Can't just be like salty red water.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so that happened. If anybody hasn't seen it, there's this just delightful video floating around. Just type in like Obama Science Fair.
You should put a link to it just because it's happy everyone should watch it.
It's so like heartwarming. He's so excited.
And he does it every year. He's done it every year. He's been in the White House.
He's the first one that did it. He brought it to the White House. And he gave a speech earlier. This was his last year doing it. And gave a speech saying that, I know. Maybe. No, it is. He's like, look, you know, the ideas of the science fair could become the great technological advancements of the future. So why shouldn't we acknowledge them? And why shouldn't we, give them a place? I think he's tremendous.
I do too. I'm going through a grieving process of slowly like denial and then acceptance and have like this whole grief process going on about losing Obama.
And like, I don't love everything about him. Like, he disappointed me greatly. But I was also listening to this thing about, Trump and the history of the Correspondents' Dinner, because that's coming up.
And, I remember
Obama's
when Obama...
Correspondents' Dinners. Man, we will never have that funny of a president in the world.
You mean Gerald Ford wasn't as good?
No, unfortunately. I remember when he roasted him.
As anger translator from Key and Peele.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I don't even know what to say. I lost my mind. Oh, I'm so incredible. Delighted
everyone
and proud.
Everyone never have anybody
and
that hip, right?
No.
Yeah, well, and that, cool. Like, authentically funny. He didn't write the jokes. No, everyone knows that. But that delivery, you can't fake.
No.
He's a funny guy. And he's
Maybe he'll have a
show on Comedy Central.
No.
Maybe he'll take over The Daily Show.
He's going to do something great.
He's going to do a lot of great things.
And
he's so young, which is nice.
Yeah, young. Yep.
You know?
Whatever he's involved in, I want to be involved in.
Me too. And Michelle too. I think once she finally gets out under the weight of the White House and the weight of being the First Lady and the judgment that comes with that, I hope that when the kids are grown and she feels like she wants to, I think she'll...
Well, if she wants it...
She was his boss. We have to remember.
If she wants it, she could maybe get a job in the Hillary Clinton White House.
Could she run for president?
Oh, my God!
She could, Molly. But I'm thinking like housing and urban development or...
I'm just saying, I'd vote for
Team Claire for life.
Like right now?
Michelle Obama. What if we just put her up at the convention? If you're Republican,
oh my God.
Like, fuck you guys. We want Obama back in the White House.
Yes.
We can't have the one we already have. We could have Michelle.
I don't think she wants anything to do with it.
I know she wants nothing to do with that at all. But I love her so much. Whatever she decides to do, I'm sure it'll be tremendous.
Yeah. Yep.
Even if it's like growing a garden and
Oh, no, we can't because somebody snapped a picture of Malia next to a beer pong table.
No, of course they
do. So no family values because black kid.
Oh, my God. And Malia and Sasha and just watching them grow, Anyway, like I said, I'm having a little mourning process, and this primary season is not helping that.
Well, this primary season is making me want to kill everything, and it makes me love Obama so much more. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Well, people are wondering why his approval ratings are going up. I'm like, really? Yeah. Do you have to wonder?
We're in the middle of primary season.
It's all contrasted. Like, you know, people are recognizing how good they had it, and they're like, oh, crap. Don't go.
Probably some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
So we got New York coming up. Hillary will win and Trump will win. And then we'll hear the pundits talk about how all the possibilities of it not being Hillary or Trump.
Yep.
Because that's what we do.
Yep.
That's what they do. And what about California? Any predictions there for the Democratic side?
Hillary and Trump.
Okay. I'm seeing some polling that's saying that.
Yeah, Bernie's making it close, but Hillary's got a foothold there. I don't think we're losing California.
I don't know. I think it's going to be closer than
too many
we want
people,
it to be.
Too many people of color, too many Hispanics.
Yeah,
it's just not good demographics for Bernie.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll be curious because I've been reading.
She's got great organization there too. I don't see her losing California.
I don't either.
Okay, good.
I think it'll be close.
I know it's funny, right? You and Molly, we're both just like, we wanted Bernie to win some stuff and do some good things.
Oh, I just want someone to win. At this point, I don't care. I just want it to be over. So I'm like, she can win everything or he can win everything. I just need it done.
I feel like Bernie's done his job. He's pushed her to the left. He's really taken the conversation in that direction.
Uh-huh.
He really succeeded in doing exactly what I didn't think he could do, and he did. And now I kind of want him to go away.
Yep.
I'm sorry, and I caucused for him, and I love him, and I love this man, but I'm at this point now where I'm like, this is getting so gross.
Well, he's not going away. He's going to take it all the way to...
No,
I'm just saying...
Do you think he's going to contest it, though?
No. That's Jeff Weaver nonsense.
No.
He's not going to contest it. If she's
good.
And what
leading
are,
in
what
delegates,
are the
that.
Bernie bros going to do when their man gets up on that stage and gives a beautiful, eloquent speech in support of Hillary Clinton at the convention?
Oh, they'll still pout and have a tantrum, just like some of the Hillary Pumas did in 2008.
Yeah.
Some of them will still vote for Hillary. A lot of them will stay home, but they don't need them to win this.
No, they don't.
The whole time.
No.
And I think after the comedy gold that's come out about Cruz, I'm a little less worried about him. God. That soup thing will follow him till...
If it doesn't, I'm going to start a pack and just play that. We're just going to, like, have a little skit where we just play out all the different possibilities of how that day went. And we'll just run it on everything, ever, wherever he's running.
Maybe Key and Peele will do a
Oh, my God.
Because Trevor Noah's already, like,
Amy
gone
Schumer.
Into it. And
Amy Schumer should do the soup skit. Oh, my God.
Someone needs to pitch this.
Somebody will. Funny or Die will, if nobody else does.
Amy Schumer should do it. She should totally be the wife who's like, what the fuck's with all this soup? What is happening?
Are you saying I can't cook?
Oh my gosh, she would turn it into gold.
I know. She wouldn't even have to like embellish it. She could just do the story.
Just do the story as told.
It would be hilarious.
It would be so good.
The story alone has made me grateful that he's in the race.
On that note, we're going to close up shop here and batten down the hatches for the coming Armageddon snowstorm.
Yeah.
And it has begun.
I think it was just raining here.
Is it snowing where you are, Molly?
No, I think it's like half and half.
Okay, good times.
I know. I got to check on my
sleep. All right. Well, we're going to stay warm, and you do the same wherever you are.
Hey, real quick, couple of announcements. Yes. Travis and I are going to be on a roundtable for Hopping Mad. Arliss is on vacation for a couple weeks. So the next Hopping Mad you'll hear will be me and Travis and some other Netroots radio family. I think Tom from the Coffee Cast, which mm-hmm. we were on, and another Netroots radio person named Katie that I don't know, but I'm really interested to know because she's really involved in reproductive rights.
The left show? Nice.
I don't know.
Okay.
And then next week, I'm going to be co-hosting Hopping Mad because Arliss is out of town. So Will McLeod and I will be talking about more LGBT stuff, more in depth. That'll be the sort of theme of the show, as far as I know. And we're going to try to get some guests, some LGBT people of color, some trans people, some people that, so we aren't just talking, as like, you know, the sort of bi privileged white people. We're going to try.
Talking for people.
Yeah. We'd like to get to hear people. So we're going to try to have that happen. If not, we'll do the best we can, but, yeah, stay tuned for that. And, we've got some shows coming up, here, which we'll keep you informed of. So yeah, just as a programming note.
Nice.
Yes, ma'am. And that's about going to do it for us as usual. I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Molly.
And we'll talk to you soon. Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and stay warm. Good night.
Maggie's Pie No More. cow soup for you.